You're listening to Ave Maria Radio, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit. The FCC requires us to reduce our power at sunset. For those affected by this change, we invite you to listen on the internet at AveMariaRadio.net.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Taking a closer, Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon.
Thank you for being with us, and a very merry and blessed Christmas to you and your families. You're listening to the Cresta in the Afternoon countdown of the top 50 interviews of the year 2007. We're now up to number 32 on the list. Raymond Arroyo. Of course, you know Raymond from EWTN's The World Over. He's the news director also at EWTN. This year, he released the follow-up to his book on Mother Angelica. It was Mother Angelica's little book of life lessons in everyday spirituality. He joined us in studio right here in Ann Arbor, Michigan to discuss that book. Raymond Arroyo, number 32 on the countdown.
The best.
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 Best. Best. Of Cresta in the Afternoon, 2007 countdown. Number 32.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. I thank you for joining me. It's my great pleasure to have in studio with me today Raymond Arroyo, who you know as the host of The World Over Live, heard seen every night on EWTN, and that'll be tonight, 8 o'clock.
Correct.
Right. And Raymond's coming through town for the Borders Book Festival, or the Ann Arbor Book Festival. People will forgive me if I keep thinking Borders in Ann Arbor. Borders Bookstore started here at Ann Arbor,
right.
And
I think they sponsor the book festival. So you're on target.
I'm on target. Very good. Well, you're going to be giving a talk.
I am. I'm going to be talking about Mother Angelica. You know, the new book is a collection of her life lessons, kind of. I often tell people the biography was the body of Mother's life. This is its lifeblood. These are the ideas, the philosophy, the personal prayers, the meditations, her private lessons to her nuns and to select laity over a 30-year period.
Yeah.
So it's I think for many people, it's been such a great source of encouragement and inspiration, throughout the Easter season. And
was it easy to cull through the material?
Easy. Al, the woman had 700 private lessons over a 30-year period. What do you mean easy? The nuns, thank God, the nuns helped me through most of it. And again, I did this book for them and for Mother, sort of as a thank you for her openness and honesty. I mean, she did not, when I was working on the biography, that was an unauthorized biography that I wrote. Mm-hmm. She totally cooperated, gave me her private letters, medical records, school records. I mean, anything I wanted or needed, she truly made available and was very candid. So when I was on the book tour, people would come up to me and say, I've just been diagnosed with MS, or I just lost a child, or my husband's leaving me. Could you ask Mother Angelica to pray for me? And if you don't mind, if you talk to her, could you ask her what I should be doing? I know she went through something similar. I need to hear from her.
Yeah.
Well, Mother had a stroke in 2001 and is unable to really speak at length. And I felt so frustrated and bad for them. I could ask for Mother's prayers, and she happily prayed for them. But the answers they wanted, I didn't have.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we discovered, when I was working on the biography, I found these recorded addresses that she had given to private lessons to her nuns and laity. They had never been heard before, Al. They were rotting in the archive. And I said, Mother, maybe I should go and dig these out. The sisters can help me transcribe them. Maybe the answers people are seeking are there.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, we started, pulling this stuff out, and we hit the mother load. I mean, it was an unbelievable cache of incredible insights, and it was before television. You know, so it was like Mother Angelica unplugged.
Before she was the electronic Mother Angelica.
You got it. Yeah. This was just when she was just Mother Angelica, not Mother Angelica media mogul or, celebrity or star.
Sure.
And there's something, I often tell people, this is my Sinatra fixation showing itself. I often tell people, this is like Mother Angelica the Capitol years, before the Vegas period. You know, this is when it's fresh and it's crackling and things are happening and it's the first time. And when people read the book, I mean, they've been writing me thousands of letters. It's so, for me, such an honor to be a part of something so good that uplifts people. Mm-hmm. But it's very practical, and they hear Mother's voice when they read it. And it's unmistakable. Yeah. You can't help but hear her voice.
Yeah, and she is one of those personalities and writers whose voice is so distinctive.
Oh, absolutely.
And so relatable that you do feel like you're actually conversing with the person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, she leaps off the page. You know, and Mother's so unpredictable. You know, the first line of the book, Al, and I put it there because it's in... Mother had this sense of an eternal perspective. She believed everything we do is part of that judgment that we will someday face. And so the first line of the book is, everybody drags his own carcass to market, so be careful, sweetheart. You know, and that's, you know, that kind of sums it up. It's earthy, it's practical, it's very wise. And the rest of the book kind of shows you how to prepare and how to live a life in full as Mother did.
Our number is 1-877-573-7825. That's toll free. 1-877-573-7825. You knew her for how long?
10 years and more now.
But I mean, you worked with her. You
worked with her for 10 years.
You were inside the work of EWTN. You're part of the life of that informal community.
Sure.
What of the virtues? Mm-hmm. What most characterized her? Which one most characterized her? Would you say?
The woman had enormous fortitude, enormous courage. When Mother felt she was called to something, you know, she says in the book, once I get an inspiration, I never question it. I know myself, and I believe if God wants it, he has a plan. If you're following God, she says, he never shows you the end. It's always a walk of faith. Franciscan virtue is to follow the providence of God, but that providence only goes as far as you go. That's the scary thing about it. If you don't go, he won't go.
Well, she always went, believe me.
I'm going to go to the calls in just a minute, but just reminding people, you do have a thespian background.
I do. I was trained as an actor in New York. I studied with the great Stella Adler, who Stella was had her own method that was kind of the counter-revolution to Lee Strasberg's method that threw half the people into the mental institution, among them, you know, Marilyn Monroe and others.
Yes.
But the beauty about Stella's technique was she helped you understand character and put yourself into other characters rather than shoving every character into yourself. So you put the character on like you put a coat on. And that allowed me, honestly, I credit Stella with helping me write the biography of Mother Angelica because I could get inside her character, her mother. You know, people always said, did you meet Mother Angelica's mother, May? No, I never met her. She was dead, you know, 20 years before I came on the scene. But I understood her, and I could get inside her head a little bit because of the acting training. So that training has come to help me in many, many ways, and you know, it's been a great blessing.
Well, it certainly is a great blessing to us to hear your impersonations and your entering into your character. The number is 1-877-573-7825. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Bob, you're first up.
Well, hi. I guess before I ask my question, I just want to first thank you, Raymond. Your 8 o'clock Friday night's part of our family routine, and I thoroughly enjoyed the biography, and I'm about halfway through your little book here.
Oh, so thank you, Bob.
I appreciate all of the work that you've done.
Well, thank you for
watching. My question is this. In your personal opinion, although she'd probably be the first one to protest about it, do you think we've all gotten to know a future saint through the medium of television, watching her appear on her Tuesday night shows and so forth?
Well, you know, Bob, I'm so close to Mother, it's hard for me to say. You know, Mother often said, it takes a saint to live with a saint. And there's probably some truth to that. But, you know, having met John Paul II and known him a great deal, and Mother Teresa and Mother Angelica, all of these people had a real, you know, there was a rock-solid core in all of them. They were tough characters. Yeah. You know, we always see the smiling, kind of beaming parts of their personalities. They also had this very tough core, and all were irascible characters to some extent. I don't mean, angry or unpleasant, but they were tough. I do see in Mother an element of real heroic virtue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see that. Despite the failings, and, you know, Al was talking earlier about how candid the biography was. I really did that partially because I felt, for the sake of honesty, you had to do it, but also because she threatened 40 years in purgatory if I didn't tell the full story. So just to get out of purgatory, I had to tell something here. But Mother was always very insistent. You know, she's very critical of the saints in this new book. There's a whole section on saints, and she talks about one is fat, one is angry, one is, you know, problem. problems with lust.
Right.
She points out their failing, and I felt I had to point out hers, because we saw the end of the life. Right. We saw the sanctity. Right. When it took a lot of struggles for her internally and externally to get there. And I think that's the witness of Mother. That's her great gift. She's available, and she makes holiness available and accessible to millions, and through the airwaves, she did the same thing. And I'm also thrilled to be with you this week, because the biography is in paperback this week after 2 years.
Yeah,
for the first time.
That. Very good.
Yeah, so
very
that's
good.
Available everywhere, so you can get it for your mother or father or friend for cheap. So this is good. Mother would like that.
Thanks so much, Bob. 1-877-573-7825. Kevin in Ann Arbor, Michigan, you're up.
Hey, good afternoon. Al, I got to tell you first, thank you so much for keeping me company on my commute home every day.
thank you.
Kind of a lead into my question, because I have such limited time for reading, and the reading that I do tends to be work related. I'm so grateful for WDEO and the blessing of being able to listen to it during my 10 hours of commuting each week.
Wow.
So Raymond, I'm wondering, you mentioned that the sisters help transcribe Mother's messages.
Mm-hmm.
Will those files ever be available electronically where I could listen to them on an audio CD or an MP3 in my car on my commute? Not that I want to not listen to Al, but...
yeah, that's right. You can listen to Al in the afternoon and Mother Angelica in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, look, they are both available.
Leave so early in the morning, it's before you have a chance to boost the power, so there are days that I don't get the transmission in the morning. So.
Well, we have a wonderful answer for you. St. Anthony Messenger has both the audio book to Mother Angelica's Little Book of Life Lessons and the biography. I read both of them. There are 26 voices that I did for the biography, so that's kind of fun. It's a radio drama.
It's remarkable. And there are people who really say the way to experience the biography is to get it on CD.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I'm partial to the CD myself. And Mother Angelica listened via CD because she has trouble reading today. It's very hard for her to focus for that long, but she listened to the CD and howled. And and the new one, the Little Book of Life Lessons, I should never have done this. I should have gotten an actress to do it, but stupidly, I did the whole thing in her voice.
Uh-huh.
So I do the little introductions that I wrote in my voice, but the lion's share of the book is in her voice, which I thought was going to kill me after 2 days. But it's a lot of fun. It's a wonderful little takeaway. So much wisdom there, such takeaway value. I'll share one or two of her thoughts later with you. So you'll have something to take with you on the way home.
Okay, Kevin. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin.
1-877-573-7825. Steubenville, Ohio. David, you're up.
Yes. I have a question. Does Mother Angelica have any advice for people who experience profound social isolation due to social dysfunctions, neurological conditions like Asperger's, which is a high-functioning form of autism, that people can't read body language, they tend to be intense and frighten people away by being too overbearing, and, you know, essentially they end up alienating themselves if they don't get treatment. Does she have any advice for people who live under this kind of a thing and can't seem to find their way to a vocation because everyone seems to take one look at them and say, no, not for me? Mm-hmm. And any prospective marriage partners,
So they're very isolated, very marginalized.
Mother talked at length because of her own personal sufferings, and you have to remember, for those who read the biography, they would certainly be familiar with this. Mother Angelica was ostracized as a child because she was a child of divorce. Mm. Her father was something of a Lothario. The mother had serious emotional issues, mental difficulties, was herself suicidal. Mother was very compassionate and understanding and aware and sensitive of people who were suffering, particularly that internal suffering. And she talks at length about it in the book. There's a whole chapter on pain and suffering. It's very practical. I'm going to share this little bit with you because I think it might be helpful. Mm-hmm. She said once, His providence, God's providence, extends to even the suffering of your life, to even the most painful moments. He weighs every sorrow in your life in that scale of His mercy. He fits the cross to your shoulder. He knows just what cross you can carry best. His providential action is present in every human event. You may not understand it now, but you will later on. When you look back at your life, you'll find many times things happened that were so disappointing. Yet as you look back, you see the good and the reason for their happening. Why can't we see it now? Why must we have 20/20 vision only in hindsight? Why can't we trust His providence
today.
Very good.
And that's, you know, that's the practical heart of her teaching.
In that one passage, you can reorient your entire life.
Yeah, and that, yeah. And the book, I've gotten, I mean, I've had Jewish broadcast executives write me. I've had high-powered atheists, people who never thought about the faith, who were given this little book as a gift by a friend or a pick-me-up, and they write these emotional letters. The book just came out in March. Mm. I've got hundreds of letters of people who've been touched by her. And it's that simple, profound, authentic power, truth. Truth is powerful. And Mother was always so honest and authentic. I think she's irresistible.
The number is 1-877-573-7825 to Houston, Texas. Gabriel, you're on with Raymond Arroyo.
Raymond, I'd like to say two things. First of all, the audiobook in both the biography and the little book of lessons is amazing. I listen to them all the time.
Oh, thank you, Gabriel.
The way you bring out her voice, the way you bring out the deacon's voice, just beautiful.
Don't tell Bill Steltermeier that, please.
No, I can see why.
No?
But but also with the little book of life lessons, I would read like a little paragraph to my. I teach in middle school,
uh-huh.
Sixth and eighth grade, and I read a little paragraph to my students. And next thing you know, kids are coming back, they own the book. They love it.
Isn't that beautiful? Well, thank
you're
you so much, Gabriel.
No, well, I thank you so much for all your work and dedication to Mother and the network.
Well, look, my friend, you're doing the important thing, shaping the next generation. I mean, it's such important work, and God bless you for sharing Mother's message.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you for providing the tools.
Well, you're very kind.
Good hearing from you, Gabriel. Thanks. Yeah. Give us a little reading.
Yeah, well, I'll read you this one, and it's typical of Mother. She said, "As I look back, pain has always been a preparation for me. The Lord allowed pain before accomplishing anything He asked me to do. It made me more aware of my own weakness, my own faults, my own incompetence, my own lack of knowledge. It made me appreciate the fact that God must do everything."
Hmm.
Again, she had this wonderful take on pain, Al. And, you know, if there's one lesson that I hope, there are two things in the book that have transformed my life. First was her understanding, deep internal understanding of pain and suffering. And there's a whole chapter I dedicated to it because it's so misunderstood in this age. Everybody wants to avoid it, and we should. But it's a universal human experience.
It is.
You know it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been through terrible things in the last few years, and God bless you for furrowing on and carrying through.
Yeah. Catholic understanding of suffering is so essential, mm-hmm. and Mother is a great exponent of it.
Well, she used to say, and I have a very sick friend, and I shared this with her recently, there is a great honor, Mother told me one day, because I was saying, you know, this must be awful for you. You know, this is after the stroke.
Yeah.
She said, there's a great honor to being treated by the Father as He treated His Son. Wow. You know, that alone, it just opens everything up. But it's in the book, Al. You'll find
okay,
it.
Okay.
It's in the Pain and Suffering. He's writing it down. But there's so much wisdom here and fun. And she's a great joy. And it's an honor for me to bring her lessons to so many people.
Well, you're a great expositor. And you're a great reflection of her spirit. Thank you, Raymond.
Oh, thank you for your witness and what you do, Al. You're the best.
Raymond Arroyo, he's going to be there in Ann Arbor, Michigan. At the University of Michigan for the Ann Arbor Book Festival tomorrow, Saturday, May 19th, 3 to 4 at U of M. Go to the Modern Language Building, okay?
The best.
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 The Cresta in the Afternoon, 2007 Countdown. Number 32.
The car business is a numbers business. And here are some pretty impressive numbers for Gene Butman Ford. Starting with 50. That's 50 years they've been serving the Ypsilanti community, which translates into 2,600 weeks or 18,250 days. You can only imagine the number of vehicles that includes and the number of satisfied customers. Just think about it. No one stays in business that long without doing things right. And isn't that the kind of company you trust to sell you a car? Here's another impressive number. 6 years winning the President's Award for Customer Sales and Service. That puts Gene Butman Ford in the top 5% of dealers nationally. Now is a great time to find out why so many people have spent so many years buying from Gene Butman Ford. Because they'll beat your best competitive deal and donate $100 to the Catholic organization or church of your choice. Visit Gene Butman Ford at 2105 Washtenaw Avenue in Ypsilanti or online at butmanford.com.
Everywhere you turn, you hear about the mortgage meltdown. The one question that everyone asks is, how did we get here?
Does this sound familiar? Teaser rates, interest-only loans, adjustable rates, low minimum payments. Those are some of the hooks mortgage companies use to get you to call them. But during the same time, Ken Town from Fellowship Home Lending was saying,
slow down, review all of your options, and get your financial house back in order. Put a plan in place for you and for your family.
Now, who do you call to get a handle on your budget? The companies that were clamoring with wild offers before now and want to clean up the mess they got you into in the first place? Or Ken Town, who has had the same message today he's had for 6 years? Who knows what you're going to hear next from those mortgage companies, but as far as Fellowship Home Lending, you know what you're going to hear.
Whether your goal is to consolidate debt or get out of that adjustable rate mortgage, our goal here at Fellowship has always been to put a plan in place so that 2 years from now, you're in a better place than you are today.
Call 800-660-6433 and talk to Ken at Fellowship Home Lending. That's 800-660-6433 or fellowshiploans.com.
Thank you for being with us as we count down the top 50 interviews of the year 2007. I'm Nick Tom. Well, we started early this year with some of the best interviews. Very early last year, early January, we talked with Ralph Martin. The book was The Fulfillment of All Desire. Ralph is one of the most effective communicators on spirituality in the church in the United States. Number 31 on the list, Ralph Martin.
The best.
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 Of Crest in the Afternoon, 2007 Countdown.
Number 31.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Good to be back with you. We've got an hour to talk about things that matter most. With me right now, Ralph Martin, president of Renewal Ministries, host of the weekly television program, The Choices We Face. He is currently assistant professor of theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in the Archdiocese of Detroit, and visiting professor of theology at Franciscan University of Steubenville, author of many books, including the one I've been raving about, The Fulfillment of All Desire, a guidebook for the journey to God based on the wisdom of the saints. Of course, we will have it available in the online bookstore today. And, Ralph, great to have you back.
Al, it's good to be back, and it's been a while, and it's kind of exciting to see you live and in person when I just listened to you on the radio in my car coming home from the seminary.
Well, I prefer the people don't see me, to be honest with you.
The great thing about radio is you can come as you are. Like,
yes.
I didn't have to put a coat and tie on, and that's really great.
Well, this book excites me. I know you've been studying the mystics and doctors of the church on these topics for years. But I know that as I was an evangelical Protestant and growing in my understanding of union with God, I found myself more and more turning to Catholic writers. But I couldn't figure out how they fit in to one another. There's a lot of the language, you know, centuries ago, and imagery doesn't always catch. And what's the, you know, you got these different ways, as I said earlier. You got a purgative way, you've got an illuminative way, you have a unitive way, you've got these seven mansions, you've got a dark night of the soul. What's the connection between all of these? And so I'm assuming that somewhere along the line you realized that this was a problem.
Well, you know, it started off more personally than that. It started off when I graduated from Notre Dame, you know, many years ago. I had a real reconversion in my life, and I knew that there was some depth in these saints and doctors of the church, so I picked up a book of John of the Cross, The Ascent of Mount Carmel, and I just couldn't figure out what was going on, and what I could figure out seemed so impossible and so extreme that I just put it down.
Yeah.
I just couldn't relate to it. I couldn't figure it out. And then 30 years later or whatever, you and I were taking classes at the seminary together.
Yep, that's
and
right.
I had to read for an assignment in a spirituality class another book of John of the Cross called Spiritual Canticle. And I took it with me on a trip. I was in Europe. I was at an airport in Switzerland. I remember reading my reading assignment, and all of a sudden, the lights went on. It's like the Lord said, okay,
yeah,
you know, you've suffered long enough trying to understand them. Here's what's going on.
Yeah.
I just felt like God had mercy on me and kind of help me understand what was happening there, and it was like so personally helpful. It was like Everything I'd ever felt or desired or longed for or experienced, whether natural or supernatural or the earth or flowers or music or love or whatever, it all came together, you know? Yeah. And I felt like, wow, I've got to know more. And so I just read all of John again, and I, you know, went to his friend Teresa, and then I went to the third Carmelite, Therese, and then I figured, you know, life is short. You know, let's really go to the best we have in the church, not only people who are saints, but people who have been recognized by the church as having a depth of wisdom and knowledge about the Christian life. And so I tried to find the doctors of the church in the area of spirituality, you know, the journey, how do you respond to God. So that's how I got these seven doctors, but it was personal. It was like, I need to know more.
To know
I want
this.
More of God. You know, wow, I'm getting understanding about things in my life I didn't know. I was probably asleep in CCD class and didn't hear these things. And just tremendously helpful things for me personally. And that's how it all started about 10 years ago, I guess.
Oh, that's great. Now, you also have, we should let people know, you have a tape series on many of these. Francis Sales, I know, Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross.
Yeah, the way it all started, I read these for myself. And then I felt like, well, gee, other people could really benefit, too. And so I did a teaching series at a parish or on a retreat or something on each of the saints individually. So I have a CD album on John of the Cross, a CD album on Teresa of Avila, and all the others. And then I felt like there's such a commonality here. Mm-hmm. And we're so used to kind of compartmentalizing. We talk about Franciscan spirituality and Carmelite spirituality, Benedictine and Dominican. And it kind of feels like it's optional ice cream flavors or something. And there's certainly distinctives there. But what most struck me is that they all see the same thing. God is showing them the same wisdom about how to make progress and what holds us back and how much God wants to do for us. And I was more struck by what they have in common than what the differences were. And I wanted to share that with people, so that's how the book came about.
So the seven doctors that you focus on.
We start with Augustine, whose insights into sin and grace and conversion and the agony of not being able to change in your life and being a slave to sin is so great. And then Bernard of Clairvaux, who does this like 30-year commentary on the Song of Songs, talking about the love relationship between Christ and the individual of Christ and the church. And you know, a lot of times people say, oh, these are mystics. They're off there in left field in their strange, subjective,
and they're
weird experiences.
Me, yeah.
And I almost wish we could do away with the word mystic, Al. You know, what these people are disciples of Christ. They're people who have met the Lord. They're people who have discovered the pearl of great price. They're people who know there's a treasure buried in the field. They're people who are trying to give their whole selves to God and to become a disciple of Christ. They're living the gospel. And that's another thing that struck me. Mm. Yes, they talk about certain experiences that people can have along the way, but that's not the main thing. What they're mainly talking about is commitment, is about discipleship, is about loving God and loving your neighbor and letting him love us and letting him dwell in us. It's so biblical.
Yeah.
And the stuff that first struck me as extreme, I'd say, gee, that sounds a little extreme. And I'd find it in the scripture.
Yes.
And not only that, but they refer explicitly to the scriptural foundations for what they're doing. I mean,
so there's a biblical worldview presupposed
it really
in all
is.
Of this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, there's a chapter here called The Biblical Worldview. And a lot of times people talk about the spiritual life as something like a little hothouse, you know, the interior life or, you know, your prayer life.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't talk about it like that. They talk about it, this is reality. This is God. This is the universe. This is the earth. Yeah. This is the human race. This is what God is doing with it. This is where it's all heading. And so they all presuppose being awesomely struck by the truth of Revelation, what God shows us about how life is short and there's only one purpose to life and we're heading for heaven and we're heading for transformation, we're heading for resurrection, we're heading for seeing God face to face and we need to be prepared for that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so biblical and it's so inspiring and it's so sound and I almost wish I could do away with the word mystical.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It does. When you say mystical or mystic, it seems to create a special category of Christian that is beyond us.
Yeah,
I
and it's sort of an optional personality quirk. Certain people kind of like that kind of stuff.
It's like they like art or they like poetry or they.
Yeah.
I don't, so I have nothing to do. And mystics, they like contemplation, and I don't, so I don't have to be part of this.
I almost wish we could do away with the word contemplation.
Yeah.
That's another scary word. Yes. It's like, what the heck is contemplation? You know, everybody who hears the word says, do I or don't I, or is this really what I'm experiencing, a contemplation? And all I would say is that it's a sense of the presence of God. It's something more than just we're generating by our own thinking or our own willing. It's something that God is doing by giving us an insight or kind of inflaming our will with greater love for Him or giving us a greater desire for Him. It's an action of God in our soul that's more than just our own effort. It's God kind of coming to us. We're disposing ourselves for God's action, and contemplation is just God's action. It's God encouraging us or God correcting us or in the very subtle, normal, ordinary ways in which it happens.
Yes. Al Martin, my guest, author of The Fulfillment of All Desire, a guidebook for the journey to God based on the wisdom of the Saints. We're going to continue our exposition and welcome you to join us at 1-877-573-7825. I'm Al Cresta.
The best.
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 Best. Best. Of Cresta in the Afternoon, 2007 Countdown. Number 31. Listen to all of Ave Maria Radio on the Internet at AveMariaRadio.net. Hear clean, crisp sound from your computer of all your favorite shows. And now you can research the things that matter most, just like Al Cresta, by going to the Cresta in the Afternoon guest archives. Find the headlines, the stories, and the link that goes into each program. Then comment on it. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. To complement Father Ricardo's 17 CD set on the rite of Christian initiation for adults, we've repackaged his 8 CD series on the Ten Commandments. The 3-volume RCIA series is $125, and the Ten Commandments set is $68. The MP3 CDs are $70 and $30, respectively. All editions of Cresta in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and Heart, Mind, and Strength are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs and are $8.50 each. To place your order for one of these talks or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506. 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. Christ is the answer.
Christ is the Answer is produced by the Ave Maria Communications Guild and is heard Wednesday evenings at 7:30, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO at 1440 WMAX.
AAA's reliable prepaid 24-hour emergency road service protects you on the road 24/7. Sign up everyone in your family today by calling 1-800-AAA-HELP. They'll love the convenience of their own membership card. You'll love the added peace of mind.
Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. We continue our look at number 31 on the countdown of the top 50 interviews of 2007. It's Ralph Martin from back in January, The Fulfillment of All Desire.
The best.
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 Best. Best. Of Cresta in the Afternoon, 2007 countdown. Number 31.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and with me, Ralph Martin, author of The Fulfillment of All Desire, a guidebook for the journey to God. Now, all of these the ways that we talk about, you've got the book organized in the classic purgative way, illuminative way, unitive way, but you the language that you use in each of these areas. So let's go over some of this as you have it in the book. And the purgative way, you talk first of all about awakening and conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Who's our best example here?
Well, you know, I use two examples there because God draws people to Himself in so many different ways from so many different situations. And I share the story of Augustine and his conversion, where he was drawn from quite a far distance away in terms of his intellectual confusion, his moral bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are somewhat familiar with his story, but when you actually break it down step by step and take a look at maybe the 25 different steps that the Lord helped him on, you know, and just first he cleared up an intellectual, philosophical confusion he had, and then he got disillusioned with making money as a teacher, and the students weren't paying their tuition, and, you know, he was getting disillusioned with the world in a certain kind of way, and then, of course, his mother praying for him, and then him, quote, accidentally running into some people, you know, or accidentally picking up a book, and just so many ways until he finally got to the point of, I want God, I want Christ, but I can't let go of the sexual addiction that I'm in. I just can't, you know, and he was like going through this agony. And then one day, the Lord just had mercy on him and released him, you know, through a certain set of circumstances. And, you know, when you've been in bondage, you really appreciate your freedom. Yeah. And he really, in such a way, tells us the details of it in a way that we can relate to. But then Teresa of Avila came in a different way. She never was involved in great sin, and she entered the convent at the age of about 20 or 21 because she started off fervent, you know, but her motivation was mainly like to save her soul, you know.
Yeah.
It was sort of like, this is the best way of kind of getting to heaven rather than hell, which is, you know, not a bad motivation, you know.
That's right.
But she says for the first couple of years, she was pretty fervent, and some of the things that she talks about in the Fifth Mansion, she was beginning to experience a deeper, you know, sense of God's presence. But then she kind of got off the track, and she said she started to like to visit more in the parlor, and she used to like to tell her visitors how important prayer was, but she wasn't praying. And then she felt so hypocritical. She felt like, what's the use of even trying? She gave up prayer for a whole year, she said. And she said the devil really kind of got her off the track. Then one day, she's almost 40 years old, and she's walking down the hallway, and she sees a statue of Christ with the wounds of his passion there. And God has mercy on her. You know, the same statue that she saw for 20 years every day, this time God
this
just...
time. Yeah. There's something, it's carrying something that she's never seen before.
Yeah, she just sees something about the meaning of the wounds of Christ and his personal love for her and what he's willing to endure for her and how he was willing to wait for her. And she just was struck to the heart and repented from her lukewarmness. And a couple weeks later, she read the story of Augustine's conversion, the Confessions. And saints make saints, you know, like... And you'll hear other saints talking about them reading Augustine's Confessions or them reading Teresa of Avila or Teresa will say she had got some really good insights from John of the Cross. And so this kind of interaction across the centuries that can happen for us right today. So she said, boy, I've wasted 20 years here. I got to get going. And she started to really kind of really single-mindedly kind of focus on the Lord. And
she was, I was shocked at how active she was.
Yeah.
I always thought of her, you know, the popular image of her as a woman of the inner life, a woman of prayer.
Yeah.
But she was founding houses. And,
yeah.
And
she was writing to kings and to the Pope, and she was trying to get John of the Cross out of his jail cell. And, she was arguing with bishops. She was getting thrown out of town. She was falling into the mud. She was, you know, sweltering in the Spanish heat. I mean, she was... You know, she founded about 13 monasteries, you know, in her lifetime before she died, and helped John of the Cross get started reforming the men, the Carmelites,
When we, again, something we don't think about when we think of the saints, we don't think about what impeded their progress.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the back of our mind, somehow we think they were gifted with something that were, or they had access to something that we don't have access to, and that it creates they're a different quality of person. But she had problems. I mean, she wrote on what impeded her progress.
Yeah, she picks out, you know, four or five different things that really affected her, held her back, and one of them she says is bad advice from her confessors. Who told her, oh, that doesn't matter, that's no big deal, why are you confessing that? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And she said she really began to do some things that were wrong. They probably weren't, you know, like gravely wrong, but they were wrong. You know, they were what we'd call venial sins. Mm-hmm. And she said, one of the things that she had to come to was an understanding that offending the Lord in a little thing was still offending the Lord.
That's right.
And she had to really come to really understand that there's ways that she had kind of accepted into her life a pattern of doing some wrong things that were not gravely wrong, but she realized that that was kind of holding her back from the full union and love relationship with the Lord. And so she said she had to come to decide to eliminate from her life and just say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Even though it's a small offense, I'm not going to do it. But she doesn't want people to get scrupulous. And she makes a really important distinction between inadvertent venial sins and advertent venial sins. Advertent venial sins, she says it's like this. You say, I know the Lord doesn't want me to do this, and but I want to do it anyway, and I'm going to. Mm-hmm. Because I know it's not really a big sin. Mm-hmm. She says the inadvertent venial sin is like what the proverb says, the just man falls seven times a day. You know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. that little impatient remark or that little white lie yeah. that you tell of embarrassment that isn't really a conscious, cold decision.
Doesn't have full deliberation.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And she says those inadvertent venial sins are going to be with us until the final purification when we see the Lord face to face, but we really can do something about making a decision about not willingly and voluntarily offending the Lord, even in a small matter. That was helpful to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had accepted some little things in my life yeah. that were not right. And I was able to, when Teresa said that, I said, wow.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Another thing that was really helpful was what Francis de Sales said about affection for sin. He says sometimes you are no longer committing a particular sin, but you're still nurturing an affection for it in your heart or a nostalgic memory or a future hope. And he gives several examples. He says it's like the Jewish people were brought out of slavery in Egypt into the promised land, mm-hmm. but Egypt was still in their heart. They still kept talking about, wow, wasn't the food better in Egypt? Man, really, food was better in Egypt. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, same old boring miracles, you know, manna in the morning, quails at night. Wasn't the food better in Egypt, you know? And he says, so sometimes we can no longer be committing a particular sin, but there still can be a nostalgic memory for it that kind of slows us down on the journey to God. And then he gives the example of a doctor who tells a patient, you know, if you keep eating melons, you're going to die. And so, maybe allergic reaction, who knows, 17th, 18th century French medicine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the person says, well, I don't want to die, so I'm not going to eat melons. But he still likes to look at melons, and he still likes to touch melons. He still likes to smell them. He still likes to talk to his friends about how great melons taste and how he wish he could really still eat melons.
Eat melons, yeah.
Yeah. And so Francis says that's the affection for sin that's still in your heart. And he says you don't have total control over that, but once you identify it, and you identify as an obstacle, it's like a divided heart in a certain kind of
right,
way.
Right.
He says what you do is you release that affection to the Lord. You close the doors to the past. You close your doors to future hope of sin. And you just really set yourself like flint towards Jerusalem, wanting God and wanting to let go of these things that still cling to us that maybe aren't sins that right. we're doing, but are affection for sin.
Yeah. So don't feed it with your attention.
Yeah,
don't
yeah,
feed it with your affection.
Yeah. And so I found that helpful. Yeah. I got to tell you, I'd never heard that before. In all my years of Catholic yeah. education, I'd never heard about affection for sin. And I just found it personally really, really helpful.
You write about the transformation of thought. Well, no, let me, before we go there, we talked a little bit about the biblical worldview of the saints.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we didn't really focus on, but I think we probably should because it's often overlooked, and it has to do with the vision that we live in light of eternity,
yeah.
and that hell is a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
This isn't something we think much about.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us don't think heaven is very close either. But my point yeah. is, if we don't think about the possibility of apostasy, and I noticed that even in the when there's been transforming union during the unitive way, that there is the possibility of people still falling away.
Yeah, Teresa of Avila says that no matter how deep the union that you reach with the Lord is in this life, there's always the possibility, even though it's hard.
Yeah.
But she says through a series of small little compromises, small little decisions, small little exceptions that you make, thinking I'm so firmly rooted in God, it doesn't really matter if I do this or that or that type of thing. And that over a period of time, one's heart can become attached again to things other than God. And, you know, the whole downward spiral can start. And it's hard, and you're really throwing away a treasure. But she says it can happen. So you need to continue to walk with great humility and great dependence on God, no matter how deep the transformation goes.
I don't want to be morbid. I don't want to be sadistic. But I don't want to be masochistic either. But how the horrors of hell, how much a part did the horrors of the possibility of hell play in the, you know, the spiritual imagination of these writers?
Well, I'd say in the spiritual imagination of the entire church for 2,000 years, it played an important part, because it was one of the things that Jesus revealed to us that's really relevant to know. I mean, you know, Jesus frequently spoke about this as a real possibility. He wept because he knew that people were rejecting him.
He used the most extreme language.
Yeah, and he says, you know, it's really possible to separate yourself from the immense love and mercy of God, and that is hell. And it's possible, because unless hell is possible, heaven is impossible, because what heaven is the freedom of love. It's the Lord didn't create us to be robots. He created us with the awesome gift of freedom, which means that there's a tremendous risk, but there can't be anything real achieved unless there's risk. You know, unless we're free to reject, our acceptance will mean nothing. You know, unless we freely choose to say yes to the invitation that God is giving us and freely choose to accept His love and forgiveness and mercy, it's like being a robot. And the Lord wanted something so much beyond human beings as robots. He wanted human beings to have the capacity to share in His own nature, you know, of freedom of will and intellect. And He wanted to give us the great chance to freely choose to live with Him forever in this immense union of love and friendship. But that means that there's the possibility of saying no, or else there's no real possibility of love. You can't have real love without freedom.
Yeah. And to say no to God ultimately means to be apart from Him for all eternity.
Yeah. God respects our decision and our freedom. And the saints are really good on this, Al. I don't know but Catherine of Siena asked God the Father. She said, come on, tell me more about what this is really like. Tell me more about what heaven is like, and tell me more what hell is like, and about purgatory. And God the Father showed her tremendous things that are completely compatible with the doctrine of the church, but kind of like fill in the picture a little bit and make it real.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of these things for all these saints is that this is real to them. Heaven is real. Hell is real. Free choice is real. The love of God is real. The shortness of life is real. The great dignity given to the human being is real. And just kind of it's kind of hit them. You know, the objective revelation of God in Scripture as it's carried in the church is living in them, and they help it make it alive in us.
St. John of the Cross talks about six classes of goods, okay? And he says we should rejoice in them. And then he goes on to lay out how our rejoicing in temporal goods can cause harm to the soul. So go ahead. And I just wanted to hear more about that.
When you first read that, you say, wow, you know, because he's saying, you know, there's temporal goods, there's supernatural goods, there's, you know, all kinds of human goods, and they're real goods, but they're not God. And he's basically saying everything that exists to play a role in glorifying God and leading us to God. So he says, like, yes, rejoice in your children, but rejoice even more that they're on their way to heaven.
Yeah.
Yes, rejoice that your child got a good job, but rejoice even more that they're living in a right relationship with God. Or rejoice that you got a raise at work, but rejoice even more that you know how to use that money in a way that's pleasing to God. That doesn't doesn't hurt your soul, you know, type of thing. Or, you know, he's basically kind of keeping our eyes on priorities, and it's basically what C.S. Lewis says about when you put the second place things in the first place, you put an unbearable pressure on them, and they get distorted and ruined.
They can't hold.
They're not God, and so they can't hold the hopes that only God can fulfill in us, the desires that we have that only God can fulfill, and so. C.S. Lewis says when you put God in the first place, everything else in the universe can take its proper place and be enjoyed in even greater measure than when you try to enjoy them apart from God or as a substitute for God. And you see that in the writings of the saints. You should. John of the Cross has these most incredible lines about singing with love the creation and joining in the song that the Son of God is singing over the universe. And
this is a man who's in touch with his senses.
Exactly.
Seeing the created order of things.
And he's seeing how our senses are leading us to something awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and so the senses and the goods of the earth properly received as gifts from God can lead us to God, but when they get held on to as a substitute for God, or when we look to find in them a joy or a pleasure or a security or whatever that only God himself can give, then we close our soul off from what we really want.
Yeah. And we lose the happiness, and we lose the pleasure, and we lose God.
So this strange thing that Jesus says about, unless you deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy to be my disciple. He who would save his life will lose it. He who will lose it will find it. It's a paradox, but it's the mystery of going through the cross to resurrection glory in all the decisions, you know, of our life. And so it's good news, Al. The whole thing is really good news.
Yes. We have, in Scripture, we have received the Holy Spirit as a guarantee of our inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
How does that relate to this distinction between spiritual betrothal and spiritual marriage?
Yeah, the spiritual betrothal is sort of like a promise that it's close.
Okay.
You keep on.
Okay.
It's like, yes, there's this really seriousness here, and yes, there's really progress here, and yes, it's coming. It can come in a sense of a greater freedom, a greater stability. It could come through a particular communication the Lord might give, a particular image he might give, or a vision.
So it may not have
any of those special things. It may just be a sense that you're really in a different place than you were before.
Is it a spiritual? Is it a spiritual act? Something that occurs to you, or is it a state that you enter?
It's a state that you enter, and you may or may not notice when you enter it.
Okay.
And you may not be even sure you're in it.
Okay.
And it's not so much even important to know where you are according to this terminology.
Yeah.
The important thing is to know how to keep moving forward.
Is to let the language keep moving forward.
Yeah, right. And
rather than getting too...
Yeah, you know, yeah, too introspective, too self-analytical about, you know, where am I, and, you know, I don't know whether I'm in fourth or fifth mansion. That's not the point.
Right.
The point is that... What I'd really like to say is what the point is that tremendous progress in transformation into the image of Christ is possible in this life.
In this life.
And not only is it possible, but it's necessary. Because, you know, the Scripture says, strive for that holiness without which nobody can see God, from Hebrews chapter 12. And so, if it doesn't happen in this life, it's got to happen before we see God. So that's where purgatory comes in. But the sooner it happens, the better.
Yeah.
Because the more then we'll be able to be a blessing to other people and not just another problem in people's lives. We'll be able to be somebody who's operating out of the perspective of the Lord himself, and we'll be able to serve. And that's why this tremendous apostolic fruitfulness you see in the lives of the saints after they go through a certain process of transformation.
Yes, even after a spiritual marriage, there's the fruitfulness
follows.
That's
one of the
it isn't as though they somehow now are taken out of the world of activity.
No, in fact, Teresa says, when you're going through the purification, and when it's intense, when the dark night's there, when you're being tested, when you're being stripped, when you're being emptied, sometimes you feel like, wow, being with people doesn't work, being alone doesn't work, I just want to die and go to God, you know, it's just nothing satisfies. And then she says, when you come through that, at a certain point in the spiritual marriage happens, you say, Lord, if you want me to stay here for 1,000 years, I'm willing to stay here. I want to work for the glory of souls. Like, I want to do everything I can to advance your kingdom. I'm willing to suffer 1,000 lifetimes in order to serve you. So there's like a switch from the agony of the purification, the transformation, to the joy of serving Christ in a new freedom, and a new freedom of fear, and a new freedom from suffering.
And a new sensitivity to others.
Yes.
And that's a very important point, isn't it?
A sensitivity to others, a sensitivity to creation, a sensitivity to beauty, a sensitivity to love. Yeah, yeah, it's good news. Yeah.
Ralph Holderdale will come back and continue. My guest, Ralph Martin, the author of The Fulfillment of All Desire, will come back and tell you how the book is available to you. Also, a few notes about tonight's programming on EWTN. I'm Al Cresta. More coming up.
The best.
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 Best. Best. Of Cresta in the Afternoon, 2007 Countdown. Number 31.
There is a direct pipeline from groups like Planned Parenthood into some of the biggest corporations in America.
Jim Crott from Faith Financial Planners discusses the dirty little secret between big businesses and advocacy groups.
It doesn't matter to these groups if there's a bunch of Christians handing out flyers or protesting in front of an abortion clinic, as long as they get their check from corporate America.
Yep, money is all that matters to these groups, and unless you have your investment screened by Jim and Stacy at Faith Financial Planners, you're potentially supporting the values of these corporations.
At Faith Financial Planners, we're going to screen your investment portfolio and give you options that aren't supporting the values of advocacy groups like Planned Parenthood.
Shut down the money pipeline today. Call 1-800-529-9434 and get morally directed investment advice from Jim and Stacy at Faith Financial Planners. Or go to WDEO.net and click on advertising links. Securities offered through Capital Financial Services, Inc., broker dealer investment advisor, NASD, SIPC.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
For our Advent reflection topic this year, we've chosen our late Holy Father's Theology of the Body. Father Ricardo studied it extensively while earning his licentiate in sacred theology. On our program this week, Father John's title is, In the Age to Come, Neither Married or Given in Marriage. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet. Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
And welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Nick Tom, counting down with you the top 50 interviews of the year 2007. We are working our way all the way to number one. If you want to follow up on any of the interviews that you've heard, we are reposting all of the information at AveMariaRadio.net. Just go to today's date in the Cresta Guest Archives and you can find all of the information, the books, the articles. Remember the stories that we're talking about in these interviews. We are going to be working our way all the way to number one, so be with us tomorrow as we continue the countdown, the top 50 interviews of the year 2007.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineer, Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. To order your copy of this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you by Ciena, the Catholic phone company. Ciena offers nationwide mobile and long-distance phone service, and for businesses, you can also get toll-free service and on-demand conference calling. Ciena is a pro-life, pro-family company and will send a percentage of your bill to your favorite Catholic or pro-life charity. More information is available at 1-877-474-3662 or on the web at prolifecatholic.com.
Wouldn't you like to invest with a mutual fund company that helps meet your financial goals and respects your moral values? Ave Maria Mutual Funds strive for strong investment performance using a pro-life, pro-family philosophy. Each fund contains well-managed companies with solid investment fundamentals. None support abortion, pornography, or non-marital benefits. Benefit from the many blessings morally responsible investing has to offer. To start now, contact us at 1-866-AVE-MARIA. That's 1-866-AVE-MARIA.
Performance data quoted represents past performance, which is no guarantee of future results. Investment return and principal value are historical and may fluctuate so that the redemption value may be worth more or less the original cost. Prospective investors should read the prospectus carefully and consider the fund's investment objectives, risk, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. The prospectus, which can be obtained by calling 1-866-AVE-MARIA or online at avemariafund.com, contains this and other information.